Welcome to Momentum Magnet, a podcast to inspire your growth. I'm Karen Morales, and your host in helping you find ways to make positive changes for your business, health, relationships, and life. We always have a path to a happier ending, so let's get started today. Hello, and happy Friday. Welcome to this edition of Momentum Magnet, where we're here to talk about business finances. And I know that is a topic that many of us like to avoid. When you ask people about their tax strategies, they sometimes roll their eyes and feign exhaustion. But I know it is such a pivotal part of every business that I was inspired to look for a guest that would make it fun. So today's guest is Nina Braun, and she's here to talk to us about everything that business owners need to know this year, the PPP loans, how to deal with new tax code, what we should be thinking about as we prepare for 2021. And I promise you at the end of the episode, you will leave a little bit more educated, entertained, and a little more inspired about this field that so many of us try to avoid. Nina is a CPA. She has all the fancy degrees from Georgetown and USC, and she's managed everything from auditing 401k plans to being a CPA on all types of businesses, manufacturing, construction, retail, and various other types of enterprises. She's here, and she promises that we will make this simple and easy to follow. Nina, welcome to the show.
Hi, Karen.
Great to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for the nice intro.
Oh, you're so welcome. So we talked a little bit as we warmed up the show that while business tax law and implications in 2020 has been truly challenging for everybody, we were also chatting about the fact that, you know, online learning in our own homes is also, you know, a little tough. So we are going to ground the episode today to say, hey, you know, maybe you've had a tough week. Maybe your kids are back in hybrid school, semi-hybrid school, another version of hybrid slash online school. I mean, I don't know the complexity, but the complexity of online school can somehow be related to the complexity of some of the tax code this year. And specifically, the number one question I heard from people preparing for the show was around the PPP loan. So as we start today's episode, maybe we can talk just a little bit about how that's played a role in your practice this year and where we are right now with how businesses should be thinking about it for the remainder of the year.
Yeah, happy to. This has been something that has affected tons of business owners, and it was kind of a moving target at the get-go, and it's still a little bit of a moving target. Congress is still working through this, so if you are out there and you're holding on to your PPP loan, the loan program closed in the beginning of August, so everyone has got loans now. You're at the end of this first round of loan program closure, and Congress is still working on it. We don't have a final answer on what it's going to look like, but what maybe I'll talk about is, as of today, what does it look like? So as accountants, we had to flip gears. For better or for worse, our tax season got extended until July. And I think it had to, as much as I hated extending our busy season, it had to be. We wouldn't have been able to make it through this, all of these PPP loan issues that were out there. The SBA issued tons and tons of guidance and changes and adjustments and Q&As, and we spent hours answering things for clients. So let me tell you a little bit about what we know now. If you have a PPP loan in general, you will probably have it forgiven.
Wow.
In general, yeah, and it will likely be forgiven. That forgiveness is taxable to you. As of right now, the way it works is the loan isn't taxable, but the expenses that the loan paid are non-deductible. So effectively, it makes it taxable because we don't make anything simple in tax law.
Wow. Okay. So this is a really good thing that we're able to stop and I can ask questions because, you know, some of us are already scratching our non-accountant heads right now. So if you're saying that the expenses that it pays for, so they really paid for salary for some employees and potentially rent and some other fixed business expenses. So you're saying if you used it to pay your lease, that part's not going to be deductible. And if it applied to salary, how does that play out?
Same deal. It won't be deductible. So essentially any expenses that you use your PPP money to pay are non-deductible as of today.
And is effectively easily deductible in other, it's not though for other employees, is it?
Yeah. Your salary expenses. If you pay an employee, that's an expense of your business.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So you have to think about that in terms of your total liability this year.
For sure. And some people may have made estimates on their taxes thinking they were going to be down this year, but with the PPP money, they may be back to where they were.
Ooh, right. So I think that really helps us understand that this is probably a year where if you're not in contact with your accountant, you probably should be earlier rather than later.
Definitely. And be kind to them. They're still coming off tax seasons and getting ready for the next tax season. So, but you should call them.
Right. So definitely call and follow up if you have the PPP loan. Now the decisions with the government when they're back in session, is it going to be for every amount would be forgiven, or do we think it's only capped at a certain level?
We think it's going to be everything forgiven. So let me take you through a couple things. One of the things that we're waiting to hear from the government is one of the proposals out there is if your loan is $150,000 or less, it'll automatically be forgiven. You won't have to really submit any paperwork. You'll just check a box that you use the funds for what they were allowed to be used for. And a majority of loans are under $150,000.
That's amazing. So that would impact probably at least half or so of the people that have gotten these loans?
I believe it's more. I can't remember the percentage, but it's more than half. Yep.
Oh, that's amazing. And when do we expect that decision to be made? Do you think October 1 is a safe bet for?
You know, this one's a hard one because right now, you know, Pelosi has said the House is going to hang on there until they can have a new CARES package out, essentially a new round of stimulus funding out. But with the election coming up, this may drag out. We may not see anything until later.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. The one good thing though, is if you currently have a PPP loan, you shouldn't be worried about forgiveness and submitting your application. Some banks are taking it. Most are not taking it. They're waiting for final rulings. And you have 10 months from the end of your covered period, which is your forgiveness period, to submit that loan application. So you have plenty of time.
Right. So that does make sense. You know, why bother with paperwork that may not be necessary? This is important. Now, if anybody's listening and has a specific question about their PPP loans, you can call us. We are live right now. So the phone number to call in is 844-305-7800. So Nina, on top of the PPP loans, and I'm sure you did spend a lot of your time on top of the already crazy tax season that was elongated this year, dealing with that, what are some of the other big changes you've seen for clients in your portfolio this year?
You know, what hasn't changed between how you make money, what your business does, people have made significant changes. And some people have adapted to this new environment and done really well. And some people have struggled through it. We're also in a period where we're seeing a lot of transactions. People who are selling their business, closing down, you know, moving on.
That's interesting. That does bring up a great point for a lot of businesses, that always having an idea of what your expansion or exit plan could be on the horizon is a really good thing to work through, not only with your own leadership team or within yourself, but to talk to your advisors about. Is that something that you often work on with clients on strategies for that sort of selling off their business?
Yeah, all the time. And this year, particularly, people are motivated to do some of that with the tax law changes coming up or the potential change in the administration. Right now, the capital gains rates are really low. If you think you can get good money for your investments or your businesses, people are looking at maybe liquidating this year.
Oh, amazing. And we have one update with our phone number today. It's really going to be 888-627-6608. And for international callers, that'll be 323-744-4831. Yeah, it has been a lot of changes this year. And I think that, you know, in our business, we've actually spent more time looking at our finances this year and being a little bit more mindful about where the expenses are coming from and how we can manage them, which I think is, you know, in some ways, a pretty positive impact of the COVID scenario.
I think you'll see more of that. I think people are more conscious of where they're, you know, getting their supplies, where their employees are working, you know, what they're doing differently to make things succeed.
Agreed. One of the things I wanted to ask was about your vision in election years. Now, one of the things we've talked about with a lot of my nonprofit clients is that in election years, no matter what happens, donations are often down after an election, because anytime there is a change in leadership, there tends to be a tiny bit of market instability. Do you feel like that sort of thought also applies to accounting and other business practices?
Oh, 100%. We've been sitting here and meeting with clients who are, you know, if our administration changes, or even if it stays the same, and you have a president who's in there for 4 years, let's say the House and the Senate don't turn over and you have one party, they've got a lot of leeway in what they can do. You know, right now, some of the key things we're looking at is the estate tax is pretty favorable. You've got a $22 million exemption. If you end up with a Democratic House, Congress, and an executive branch, that will likely flip back to prior levels of maybe a $5 million exemption. And so a lot of clients, that's where they're deciding, should I sell my business? Should I key it up just in case things are going to change?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think that it's very challenging for businesses to figure out what to do next, especially when kind of the end game and the laws keep changing. So if you're in a business today and you're listening to this and thinking, wow, yet another curveball we're being thrown, how do you suggest approaching it strategically so that you're not spinning your wheels and chasing potentials, but you're really focusing on making changes in your business around the certainty?
You know, accounting and tax law, I think that's the tail that wags the dog.
Yeah.
You know, it's an administrative. You got to do what you need to do with your business. And then the tax law, if it follows that, if you owe a little bit more tax, if there's a little bit of adjustment, I think that's okay. I always tell everyone, if you're on the bubble and you think you're going to sell your business in 2020 or 2021, then maybe you go, well, I'm going to accelerate it and move some things up. Or if you think you're going to liquidate some investments in 2021, maybe you have a kid going to college or you need them to buy into something else, then maybe we accelerate it to 2020 where we know the tax laws. But I always advise, don't let the tail wag the dog. Don't spend a dollar to save 30 cents in tax. You need to make your business decisions.
Right. Right. And that totally makes sense. And does that also apply to personal taxes? Like if we're thinking about, all right, our businesses may have a big tax implication this year if we took the PPP loan and maybe we weren't expecting that became a taxable expense. So if we then decide to shift focus and think, all right, I'm really going to try to be as thoughtful as possible on the personal side, do we know if there's any big changes there for this year?
Not a lot of big changes as of right now. The only thing you're going to see when you mention nonprofits, the 1040 will change on the front of everyone's 1040, even if you don't itemize, which a lot of people don't itemize anymore because they lift the itemized deduction limits up. There'll be a spot where you can deduct up to $300 in charitable donations if you don't itemize. And that'll be the only real change we see right now. But there's a lot of time to the end of the year and an election.
Right. So that's true. That's actually a good little tidbit. If you are an listening and you do have a nonprofit and you tend to field smaller donations from a large part of your base, which most nonprofits do, that would be a great thing to reinforce in year-end gifting campaigns, that there is the ability to deduct up to $300 and maybe drive up some of those smaller amounts. That's a great tip. I will actually bring that back to a couple of the nonprofits we're working with.
Your other great nonprofit tip is with the itemized deduction being about 12 grand for single filers and 24,000 for married filing joint. What a lot of people are doing who are inclined to be charitable is they are making those charitable donations every other year so that they can get the best bang for their buck on the deductions.
Oh, so, how does that work?
So let's say I normally give about $10,000 a year, right? Well, now I'm married. My itemized deductions are $24,000 from the government, period. So let's say I have $10,000 of state and local income tax. That's a limit. $10,000 of charity, a little mortgage interest, and I'm barely at $24,000, right? So that charitable deduction I make in that year, it doesn't give me any tax benefit. So if I made zero charitable deduction this year, but I made $20,000 next year, well, then the government pays for essentially 30% of that $10,000 deduction. Does that?
Because you're going
over the itemized deduction limit. So you are getting a tax benefit for it that you wouldn't have before.
Oh, that's really interesting too. That's another really positive strategy to give some of the nonprofits to have people bucket their money in one year versus another. That's beautiful. So yeah. If we're looking at our books this year, which all of us should be doing, and we want to really make sure that we are in good control of our finances, what metrics do you suggest that every business owner should know off the top of their head?
I will tell you, first thing, if we're talking about small business owners and you have a business, the first thing you want to do every month is to look at your bank statement. A lot of times we outsource that. Maybe we have an administrative person or somebody else helping us reconcile our amounts in QuickBooks or accounting software, and we're not looking at our bank statement. You need to look at those every month because that's where you're going to catch, you know, fraudulent charges. You're going to catch errors on there, duplicate payments. Every month you want to look at what are my cash transactions. After that, you're really looking for, if you can keep an ongoing balance sheet, you're looking for at your working capital every month. What are my current assets to my current liabilities? If I had to liquidate today, what do I have to liquidate? And then the next thing you want to look at is your margins. Every time you sell something, are you making money on it? Do you know what your overhead is? Yep, I make $60 every time I sell one of my craft projects, but does it really actually cost me $70 to make it?
Yeah, those are extremely important metrics. There's been a lot of talk in the online marketing world, especially around, you know, coaches and business owners that are celebrating the milestones that they've made in their business. So for example, I've entered the seven-figure club, and there's been a lot of pushback from people within the industry to say, that's great, but what are you actually keeping in your bank? So you can make all the money that you want, but when you're not turning a profit, maybe you shouldn't be so proud and so boisterous. So I'm actually seeing that come up more in some of these conversations online where people are getting challenged to be a little bit more transparent about what quote unquote financial success actually means.
Yeah, that's a great point on the marketing side. For a lot of people in those industries, it's harder to measure what your cost of giving that product to your customer is, right? If you're an old school manufacturing company, you know what it costs to create the product, sell the product, their hard cost, right? If you bill a client $10,000 as a marketing company, you really need to think about what goes into that. I have my salary expense, but what else do I have? Do I have my subscriptions, right? Maybe you're subscribing to some national databases or something that gives you statistics in that industry to help those clients. Do I have other costs I need to cover, like my administrative person who's back at the office scheduling my appointments? You know, a lot of those soft costs are harder to see in those kind of industries.
That's really true. And I think another thing that you brought up that's really important, because this just happened to me, is being very careful with your online accounts. So I not only had a whole bunch of fraudulent charges on my business credit card, but I actually had my identity stolen a couple of weekends ago. and had fraudulent unemployment claims placed against my business. And the beautiful thing about fraudulent unemployment claims claimed against the owner of the company is that I get the alerts. So the fraudster did a really bad job picking their target because they filed with the unemployment office and I got a triggered email almost immediately and was able to, you know, handle the situation. But it was very disconcerting. And I was told to file a police report with our local police department. And I was really shocked when I had a conversation with the officer to find out that he's taking multiple reports daily.
Really? There's a lot of that going on right now because there's so many government programs and people are out of work and they're finding different ways to come after companies. So it doesn't surprise me that you got caught, but the good thing you were doing is opening your own mail and looking at it. You know, sometimes mail goes unopened for a period of time, or maybe an administration person opens it, and maybe they're not telling you what they're seeing.
Yeah, and that's really, really important. And I think that is the challenge with finances. I mean, I've been working in marketing with financial services organizations for almost two decades. And I have sat in focus groups across the country with all levels of investors and retail bankers and all sorts of consumers that experience financial services. And the number one pain point that I have seen with all of my clients, whether it's a business or an individual, is that people avoid responsibility with their finances. They would rather put their head in the sand. I was actually in a focus group after the market crash in 2008. And this was the most telling example. There's a woman who said that she lost 80% of her retirement assets literally overnight. She opened that first statement that showed the devastating loss. And 4 years later, she had never opened another one. And she admitted in this focus group that the idea of dealing with it was too stressful, so she just decided to throw them all away and ignore the problem.
That doesn't surprise me at all. You know, the financial piece, it's interesting as a business owner, people start businesses because of what they're passionate about, right? And very few of them are passionate about accounting, so that's what their business is, right?
That's what keeps you in business.
Right. But they're passionate dentists. They're passionate, you know, marketing consultants. They are passionate about those things. And they say, well, I'm a dentist. And it says, well, that's great that you're a dentist. You own your own practice. Yep. But you're not a dentist. You're a business owner, right? You need to open those statements and you need to look at them. And people, once they get into one of those binds, it's hard to open those statements, or you're so passionate about what you do that you haven't left time for the administrative side of it and the business side of it.
Yeah, that's a really interesting comment. And it's something that reminds me of a conference that I went to. I went to a Tony Robbins conference called Business Mastery. And he talked about this idea a lot, that everybody who owns a business can put themselves most naturally into one of three buckets. You're either an artist, which doesn't necessarily mean you're a painter or a sculptor, but it means you're an artisan or an expert in a craft. That could be being a mechanic. It could be a hairstylist. It could be a marketing master. It could be an accountant. But there is something that you're doing in your job. It's because you love that job. Maybe you're a baker. And then the second piece is you're a manager. So you like the operations and making that expertise come to life and be delivered successfully. So that would be like the manager mindset. And the last piece is really the entrepreneurial mindset. So it's, how are you wired to balance security and risk? How are you wired to look at growth strategies? How are you wired for innovation? And the challenge is, a lot of us, more often than not, live in the one zone of genius, and we either don't flex our muscles in the other ones, or we don't augment our team with people whose genius is either operations or business, which I thought is really interesting.
That is really interesting. And it's interesting how many small businesses that I think the key leap is the leap where you're making more money for yourself than you were working for somebody else, right? you've figured out how to leverage what you do, or you've at least stayed at the same level when you worked for somebody else. Because just because you can bill that much, you may not have an understanding of what the expenses are on that side or what it costs to keep that ship moving in the right direction. So I think that's a great way to look at it.
I know it was easy for me when I was starting my business, because the thing I was most worried about was the accounting and legal contracts. So I immediately hired people to do those parts of my business. And, you know, in true disclosure, Nina is my accountant. So, you know, it was helpful to have someone on my team always looking at those pieces of the business. But I have learned, because I didn't start out with Nina, I started out with a smaller organization. And I have found accounting errors over the years. So I do believe that as you grow and before you've perfected your team as an owner operator and a business leader, you need to keep your eyes open across all areas of your business so things like that don't happen.
Oh, I totally agree. And sometimes there are things that accountants that aren't the right things to offshore. You know, like in your business, you're probably the one that has to look at your billings, right? And you yeah. got to make sure those go out every month and you know what the client expects. And if you just said, hey, bill this, you know, an outside accountant wouldn't probably get it right in the way you'd want it.
Yeah, I do control my client billing and contracting, because I think it's really important to at least be aware. I know you get to a point in every business where you become too big to look at every single contract that goes out, but it has been really important for me. So one thing that came up that you just mentioned when you said offshore. So this is a theme that I'm seeing a lot in the online marketing and also in startups that are doing technology projects or builds that are looking for offshore resources at lower cost to create. So one of the things that one of the clients had asked me as we were prepping for this podcast was, how do we feel about a US-based company hiring resources in other markets to do pretty important business activities? What from the, you know, the legal side is another conversation, but from the accounting side, are there any tax implications if you're looking at, you know, putting your dev team in India?
You know, there may be some. I'm by far not an expert in international tax law, but you'll want to watch how things are billed between companies and you know, who's providing the services, where are the sales tax getting paid. There are some things you need to look at on those. And you need to make sure that, because, you know, we just talked about fraud and unemployment claims. There have been great experiences offshoring, but there've also, it opens you up. You need to be really sure where your data is going and what that organization is like, because if they don't have good controls, you've opened up your data a little bit further.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think the payment situation can be challenging. I mean, I had a moment in time. I'm working for a startup that has operations in Europe, in Switzerland, you know, a very obviously established market. And it's a company that has, you know, European roots, but also, you know, an office in Northeast of the United States. And I had a really hard time at first in understanding how they could send a payment over, because it looked like QuickBooks Online wasn't going to accept an out of country payment. And I keep, you know, all of my invoices in that one system. So it's interesting too to find ways to move money globally when you're not, you know, a multinational corporation, and to have a very clean audit trail. I know that, you know, there were some discussions about using PayPal, and I was thinking to myself, like, Nina is not going to like that, so we're not going to use PayPal. I already know the answer is going to be, that's a hard no, Karen, we're not doing that. So
It opens you up to some risk.
Right. So, I mean, I know in that particular situation, for some reason, even though it said in the rules it wasn't going to work, it did. So we didn't have a problem. But it's something to really think about. If you are using tech talent overseas, if you're outsourcing some of your design resources or your customer service, I see it often in CRM management. Some bigger companies using a Marketo or a Salesforce will have some of the tech updates be completed by resources not in the United States because it saves them massive amounts of money and capital, human capital, expenses. But it is something to really think through and talk to your advisors about before you do it. Because I do think the motto here in accounting, like many things, is it's much easier to plan for it than to clean it up.
Oh, for sure. And again, anytime you offshore, even if you turn something over to an accountant in the U.S. or, you know, a subcontractor, you're the business owner. You need to make sure that you're getting the service you want out of it and monitor what they're producing.
Perfect. So we're going to give you one more, you know, chance to call in if you have a pressing question. It's 888-627-6008 will be our call-in number today. So, Nina, in your practice across your organization, what are the companies that you see are most impacted right now? And how are, or what markets are the ones that seem to be thriving through this unprecedented time?
You know, I think we've seen the hardest hit here is the hospitality industry. Mm-hmm. You know, travelers aren't traveling the same way they did before. And either as a hospitality provider, you're either trying to find a way to adapt to the new, you know, people aren't flying in and taking a car service to your place, right? They're driving in. They, instead of eating at your restaurant, might be carrying groceries. You know, what are you doing to adapt to those? But hospitality has been hit really hard. And I live in Western South Dakota in the Black Hills. We have been open. South Dakota has not shut down through this, for better or for worse. And our hospitality group has found that they've been able to rebound if they can adjust, because people are driving out here instead of flying. But they found ways to make it work. But some don't have the resources or capacity to change the process. And that's something that consumers haven't been coming flocking back to.
Yeah, that is really important. So, okay, I have to take a break from accounting really quickly, because you are the only person I know from the Dakotas. So I want you to give a chance for everyone to know, what are the hot drivable vacation destinations in your market, in case somebody is listening to this and thinking, I've got to get out of Dodge, got these homeschooling kids that need a road trip. Tell us some of the fun places that you could go in. Is it the Black Mountains?
I don't Black even Hill. Know. Yeah, Black Hill. Bad advertising.
I'm interested. Give me a little, yeah. Give me a little break for a little Dakota promotional
thing. They should have had a better marketing campaign out here. If we call them mountains, we'd probably get more people attracted to them. But these are the Black Hills here are taller than most of the mountains on the East Coast. I'm a reformed East Coaster. I followed my husband out here. But if you drive out here, we're in Western South Dakota. What we are known for, about 20 minutes from Rapid City, South Dakota, where I live, is Mount Rushmore.
Oh yeah, of course.
So yep. What you would hit your driving trip would be Mount Rushmore. You'd run down to Custer State Park, where the buffalo roam open in the state park.
Love it.
And then you could, if you're a Springsteen fan, you could stop by the Badlands on the way here.
Amazing.
And you can see what the Badlands are about. It's really neat. It kind of looks like you're on the other side of the moon. But what we're known for here is a driving type road trip. So there are campgrounds everywhere, VRBOs, efficiency type hotels. This place is known and built for the road trip.
And that is a really interesting. And the reason that I wanted to stop there and ask that question was simply to reinforce that idea that there is always room for the pivot, right? So many markets are closed. I mean, you can't easily jump on a plane and go to Hawaii. I mean, I think they've closed it to even mainland visitors for at least the short term. But the driving road trip has really taken off. And I believe, like you said, that even though hospitality is so strongly hit in a lot of markets, like, it probably has never been a better time to pitch the Dakotas as a vacation destination, because people are looking to do out of the box things. Anything these days that's different sounds fun.
Yeah, we're an outdoors place. I have a friend who owns a motel, and this summer in their pivot and all of this, they were terrified when everything went down in April and May, but they went and made all of their doors keyless entry. So you do not have to visit their front desk. They have all efficiency units. So everyone has a kitchen, and their folks come into their place and they hop on the app and they download a key and they use that to scan in the door.
That is a beautiful, beautiful idea. I bet more and more hotels are going to be moving that way. I mean, it just gives people a chance to kind of speed up the technology and adopt it more quickly.
Yeah, and think about what it saves you on a front desk person.
Huge amounts of money. So that's really beautiful. Now, I really do want to do this cross-country road trip. Every time I speak to someone in one of these far, far off markets, I keep picturing this drive that I'm going to take from Massachusetts to the West Coast. And online schooling keeps continuing. We may be doing that sooner rather than later.
It is one way to look at online schooling as an opportunity.
Totally. Totally. So how did you become an accountant? What got you jazzed about it?
I fell into it. And so it's hard to be jazzed about accounting. You know, when I was in college, if I pictured an accountant, which is probably still how I picture an accountant, I'm looking like at an old white guy with a calculator, maybe an adding machine and some pencils, you know? So I never thought about accounting entirely, cause those weren't my people, you know? So I went to college. When I was graduating college, the accounting profession changed and required essentially 150 credit hours or a master's degree to get a CPA. And there was a firm advertising that we'd pay for your master's degree if you came and got a CPA and worked for us for a couple of years. And I went and did that because I thought it couldn't hurt me to get another degree that somebody paid for. And it turned out it stuck. I really like it because accounting is not just numbers. It's really about, like we talked about today, you know, helping business clients and being, you know, part of your client's business team.
Yeah, that is really important. I think having someone that looks at your numbers with the same passion that you look at your craft or your marketing or your sales is really important. So if somebody is listening to this today and thinking like, wow, I need to hire Nina or someone like Nina, what do you say are the most important things to look in when you're hiring an accountant?
So I'd for sure look at their credentials. Is the firm similar to a size of my kind of business? I would interview the person you're looking to hire. You're not always the right fit for people. I've told people I don't think we're a good fit after we've talked on the phone. You know, if you can get a referral, that's best. And then the one thing I'd ask your accountant to have is, you know, business moves fast and payroll gets paid all the time and you may have accounting questions that are quick. Look for somebody that's got a 24-hour call policy. Like, it doesn't mean I answer you at 24 hours a day. It means that within 24 hours of you reaching out to me, I'll have gotten back to you.
No, but this is a funny story, but a great one. So your building actually got struck by lightning recently.
Yeah.
The day that my payroll was supposed to go out. And my bookkeeper who works on your team texted me from her personal phone to say, hey, the building did get struck by lightning. We're down, but I will get this payroll process. Don't you worry. I don't actually know how she did it, but everything went off without a glitch. And while I, you know, with bated breath sort of checked my bank statement the next morning to make sure that it had gone out, no problem, no disruption. And that is really important that, you know, even if the servers do go down in the entire building, that there is a backup plan.
Yeah, that was a bad day, but we got everything out the door that day.
Hey, no, just I paid my mortgage. We were good. We were good. My whole team was paid. We were great. But that is a testament to your level of service that I almost thought she was kidding. And then I realized.
Yeah, no, that's kind of you. But yes, we got hit. It's wild, but that's what you want to make sure is payroll's important. You know, if you're going to hire someone to do that, your people need to get paid.
Totally. Totally. That's a business continuity, like cannot stop process. So what is your best business advice?
You know, I tell you, if you're gonna, you need to be the best at what you do as a business owner. Be the best salon owner, the best dentist, the best mechanic that you can out there. And then make sure that you have control over your back office too. So, you know, your customers may not see your back office. They see that you're a genius at what you do. Your consulting is better than anybody else's, and they don't see your back office. So put your best business front first, but don't forget your back office. And if you need help on it, hire it out. But don't ignore it. Don't not open your bank statements from the time the market crashed in 2008. You know, you got to make sure that with your best front office, you have a good back office too.
Yeah, that's really important. I actually work with a few 1099 contractors who help me with different parts of creative services at times. And one of them is a genius and one of my favorite people to work with ever. And at times I don't get invoices and I have to track him down sometimes to say, I know I owe you money, but I'm going to need an invoice. Like, remember to do your invoices. I know that I still need to pay you. But I often think to myself, like, I'm very honest and I would never burn that bridge. And I'm always a reminder, but I'm sure other people that some of these really skilled geniuses work with, if they're not remembering to do their bills, because it's not their zone of genius, they could be losing money.
You know, billing is one of those number one things. It's funny you brought it up because billing is one of those things that people don't get out, because part of it is I think they're afraid of their value a little bit. Like, oh my gosh, I got to send this person this giant bill. What's that going to be like? And billing is one of those things that, like, the farther you are away from that service, the less that's valued to the client, right? When you give a great piece of service and if you bill them right away, they feel good about paying your bill. But people seem to just don't have the confidence to get their bills out.
Right. And I found that especially with ongoing retainers, and I know you do this as a firm, to just send the reoccurring bill that is, you know, auto deducted out of someone's account so they don't even have to look at it when it is, you know, a service. That's how Netflix works. That's how, you know, Amazon Prime happens once a year. I mean, it is much easier if you can automate some of these things because it takes some of the personal challenge for some people out of it. That leads me to a really interesting question for you. You know, as a woman, as a female partner in an accounting firm, and I'm a female business owner, I find very often that when I'm sitting down with businesses run by female founders, not all of them, but I would say this happens more often than it does with male founders, is I have to give pep talks on giving them permission to bill more, to really think about their value in a less dismissive frame of mind and really charge for the services and the outcome that they are delivering. Because I find so many female business owners and artisans charge not enough for their craft.
I've seen the same thing, and they'll say, this client's the worst. I got to get a bill out to him. And I always say, you know, bill him to death. Like, if that client is giving you pain and suffering, then bill for the pain and suffering. And either they will go away, you will bill them to death, or you'll make enough money on it that you'll feel like, well, that's part of the pain for this rate. Does that make sense?
150%. And I have seen them, and I'm in an entrepreneurial group in my hometown in Boston with about 50 different women. And about 20 of us are tight and close and follow up and do a yearly planning session together. And we celebrate when people break up with bad clients. We have a little party because it's almost like ending a terrible relationship. You don't think you can do it. And once you do, the freedom and the relief you feel in your soul will enable you to walk into such a bigger and better situation.
Oh, you're exactly right. You free up your resources and you have some joy and to work with people that value you and your services. In my business, the ones that give us pain are the people who come in on April 14th with all their stuff in a garbage sack and are like, can you get my taxes done? And those guys are at a different rate than the folks that show up in February.
Yeah, and they should be. I mean, one of the things that I instituted in my own business as I meet with different clients to potentially take on marketing services was I was asking myself the question of, why are some relationships with startups so beautiful and some are so hard. And I found out that it didn't really necessarily tie back to the brilliance of the idea or the thing that the person was selling. It really tied back to the leadership and the strategic vision of the owner, operator, CEO, whomever was hiring me. And what I broke that down to be was, if somebody came to me and said, it's all a mess, fix it, it was never going to end well. Because if you can't articulate what are your core challenges and you just kind of dump a burning trash can in someone else's lap with this idea that they will fix it for you, the chances of that happening are very slim because you don't have a shared definition of what problem you're solving or what good looks like.
Oh, yeah. They could call anyone for that. You know, it doesn't, you as the consultant and the person working with them, why call you? Why not call anybody? You know, you want people to call you because they value and they can use your skill set for that problem. Yeah. And when you have a dumpster fire, you know, you're not the firefighter for that.
Right. And that's the same, I think, as somebody coming to your office with a bag of receipts saying, you know, fix this. You're like, okay, there's a lot of things we need to fix. First thing, I was like, why are your receipts in a bag? Let's start there. There's electronic systems for that. Okay. So the last question that I wanted to leave us with is, I know you're not a fortune teller, but if you were to guess, do you feel like there will be additional rounds of economic stimulus coming? And what do you think the changes could be for 2021 tax law and beyond?
Good question. I don't have a crystal ball, but I do really believe that the House and the Senate and want to get something out to give individuals some tax relief and to give them another round of stimulus funds. So I do believe something's coming up. I think my best guess would be we'd see another $1,200 stimulus payment to folks. I think that will come through. I think if they can't get their job done at the House and Senate level, that we might have an executive order that does that. I'm by far no expert on that, but I think you'll see that. I think no matter what happens in this election cycle, that either the executive branch or some of the legislative branches will turn over to the other parties. So I think we're going to see tax law change. I'd like to think they'll look for some other places. We've been very favorable to businesses that maybe the middle class will get some benefit and relief on there. So I'm hopeful to some of those things. And again, I hope we'll see another stimulus round, and I hope they can get something done here soon.
Yeah, so that's great. So I think, you know, none of us know for sure, and we're not predicting or have any inside information, but the idea that potentially individual focused stimulation is coming is probable. And then for a lot of businesses, I mean, you may not be seeing another round of large sweeping investments. So it really is the right time to be thinking about, how do you tighten the bootstraps in your own business? How do you look to change things like adjust your margin or address your cost of doing business? And then lastly, how can you pivot to grow? Because I know I speak to all of my clients, and that most of the world's most successful companies were driven out of necessity or an economic downturn. So it is really the time to capture market share, because the needs of the consumer are so vocal in these times of crisis.
Agreed.
Well, beautiful. Well, if people want to get a second opinion on their taxes, how could they reach out to you? And can you also talk a little bit about how the fact that you're in a different state, you can still easily do taxes for anyone across the country?
Yeah. You know, if you're looking for us, our firm is Cadle Thorstensen. We are at ktllp.com, and we're here in Rapid City, South Dakota. All of our contact information is on there. And you know, love to hear from you. Sometimes you don't know how great your taxes situation is or how poor it might be. So we'll look at your returns for free in the off season and let you know if we find anything. The best thing about COVID has been that I've done this remote work for a long time. I was an East Coaster, and I, like I said, I followed my husband out here, And so I work with a lot of friends back east and a lot of businesses back east, but now it's so easy to send things over a portal. So many of your tax documents are electronic, your QuickBooks is online. You know, there's so many great ways to access that. So we'll talk on the phone, we'll have a Zoom meeting, and then we'll do a lot of your taxes back office here in South Dakota.
It works really well. Ringing endorsement for Nina and her team. Well, thank you, and I hope you have a fantastic weekend and that homeschooling continues to go well and your kids are back in school, I think, next week, which is beautiful. And thanks, everyone. I hope this inspires you to not ignore those envelopes, to open up your P&L, and to really use this end of your season as a time to be proactive about thinking about your business and personal finances. So thanks for joining us at Momentum Magnet. Thanks to Nina Braun, and we hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to Momentum Magnet. We're here every Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time to share inspiring comeback stories. We want to hear your reviews and love getting your subscriptions on iTunes and Spotify. For show notes and past episodes, visit MomentumMagnet.com. I'm Karen Morales, keynote speaker, writer, and founder and CEO of Marketing Magnet, a fast-growing marketing agency for purpose-driven companies. Whether you are a business needing an agency, or if you are looking for weekly tips to get ahead, sign up at marketing-magnet.com to receive our weekly inspiration on getting more in your life and business.